Blue Dot, Episode 3, Gravitational Waves on the Shores of the Earth.
Einstein, in his brain, came up with these equations, and essentially these stretched across a billion light years away to make a prediction about something that happened that was then observed in a billion-dollar observatory 100 years later, the work of 1,000 people working very hard. And it pushed a mirror back and forth a tiny, tiny amount, smaller than the size of an atom. And the prediction was exactly right. It is just astonishing that we can do that well. And I think that we human beings have the right to pat ourselves on the back a little bit for understanding our universe quite this accurately.
Welcome to Blue Dot, a look at our place in space. I'm Dave Shlom, along with our co-host Matt Schultz. Matt, hi.
Hi, Dave. Pretty exciting news.
We are talking about one of the great discoveries in the history of physics, the detection of gravitational waves, which is another confirmation of Albert Einstein's general theory of relativity. And the interesting thing to me is that the confirmation occurred almost exactly 100 years to the day after the publication of the general theory of relativity.
People in the science world sort of knew that it was true.
We were sure that there were gravitational waves. It's just, could we detect them? Could we develop the technology? Could our grasp finally match our reach?
And we answered that question.
Yes, and the answer is a resounding yes. And the way we did it is through an instrument called LIGO, which is a billion-dollar instrument funded by the National Science Foundation. It's the Laser Interferometer Gravitational Wave Experiment, and there's two of them, and they both simultaneously made this observation. And as we're going to hear from our first guest, a senior physicist at Caltech, Sean Carroll, there's a reason that you wanted to have two. Sean, first of all, tell us, are you in any way associated with the project, LIGO?
I'm not. I'm at Caltech, which has a big investment in LIGO, and in fact, my office is one floor up from many of the people who work on LIGO, but I have no connection with them directly.
Good. That means you're going to be very objective.
Totally objective, 100%.
Can you explain to our listeners, for the lay audience, how LIGO works, how it detected gravitational waves?
Well, basically, a gravitational wave is a literal stretching of space-time itself. So if you have two objects that are far away and a gravitational wave passes by, as that happens, the objects come a little bit closer, then a little bit further away, then a little bit closer, and back and forth. They oscillate. The problem is it's a very, very, very tiny effect. So what LIGO does is it hangs a mirror from a pendulum, and it bounces a laser beam off of that mirror through a tube 4 kilometers long. It does the same thing in another tube at right angles to the first one, and then it says, is there a change in the wavelength of the laser beam, in the number of times that the laser went back and forth in that tube? And if the distance has changed a little bit, if the gravitational wave has squeezed things together by rocking the mirror a little bit closer, you'll be able to see the difference between one tube and another.
And there are two detectors, right?
That's right. So when I say there's two tubes, that's in each detector. The LIGO is a big L shape at every facility, and there's one facility in Washington State in Hanford, and there's another in Louisiana in Livingston.
And both of the detectors observe this gravitational wave?
Absolutely, and that was the plan all along. You know, they didn't build two just because they had more money than they knew what to do with. They knew that if you see a signal, you're going to worry that it's not a gravitational wave, it's a truck going by or something like that. So not only did this particular signal have exactly the characteristics that we would expect from two black holes spiraling together, but it was seen in exactly the same way in these two different detectors in two different places.
For our listeners, explain to us, why is it that two black holes spiraling together, what would that phenomenon create that produces the gravitational waves we observed?
Well, basically, everything creates gravity. Everything in the universe, if it exists at all, it reacts to and creates its own gravity. But gravity is a very, very weak force. You have your own gravitational field, but no one would ever notice it because you just don't have that many atoms. So if you want a big effect, if you want a lot of disturbance in the gravitational field, you need something extraordinarily massive. So So black holes are good because they can be very heavy. These black holes that we're looking at were 30 times the mass of the sun each. And then you want to take these massive objects and you want to move them very rapidly. If they're just sitting there quietly, then they have a gravitational field, but they don't emit gravitational waves. To get the wave out, you really got to shake these things back and forth. That's a hard thing to do. You have something 30 times the mass of the sun. How do you shake it back and forth? The answer is you couple it right next to another 30 solar mass black hole, and over the course of billions of years, these guys have been spiraling together very slowly. We caught it at just the right moment when the two black holes exactly came together to make one big one.
And how for our listeners, how would you know from the gravitational wave that that's what happened, that it was two black holes doing this? How do you know that that's the signature of that phenomenon?
Well, we've had time to plan, basically. We've been thinking about building gravitational wave detectors since the 60s or 70s. And LIGO really became conceptualized in the 80s and started as a project in the 90s. So over time, we've been thinking, I say we, I don't mean me, but I mean astrophysicists, general relativists, numerical physicists have been plotting out what it would look like when different things happen. When a supernova explodes, what kind of gravitational waves does it give off? When two neutron stars come together, what do you get then? When two black holes come together, what do you get then? So we basically have templates. We know what all of these things are supposed to look like. And we match that template to what signal you actually see in the detector.
Put this into perspective for us. This is one of the great confirmations of Einstein's general theory of relativity. How does it rank up there with the other confirmations?
I think it's one of the best, really. The very fact that gravitational waves exist is true for Einstein and would not have been true for Isaac Newton. Gravity just works very differently in Newtonian worlds than in Einstein's world, but also it's a detailed prediction because it involves both these gravitational waves traveling through space for a billion years and also the details of black holes. The black hole itself is a wonderful prediction of general relativity. So the very fact that these things exist and they interact and give off signals in exactly the way that is compatible with Einstein's theory from 100 years ago, it's just kind of amazing to a physicist. It brings home how incredibly powerful good physics is to describe our world.
Can you explain to us briefly the differences between Newtonian gravitation and general theory of relativity?
Yeah, you know, Newton was the boss of physics for a long time, from the 1600s to the 1900s, and he's still what we teach to high school students or first-year freshmen in college. He says that gravity is a force that attracts things together. He invented the famous inverse square law. The strength of gravity depends on the mass of an object you're talking about, and then it gets fainter and fainter the more distant these two objects come from each other. But it's basically a force. It moves through space-time. If you move something, according to Newton, the gravitational force, the gravitational field around that object changes instantly when you move it all throughout the universe. Now, Einstein comes along, and he, even though the predictions are very similar for us here on Earth, his way of thinking about gravity is very different. He says that space and time are not fixed and absolute. They're dynamical. They can change. And the stretching and warping of space-time is what we feel as gravity. And when you push something around, when you change its position, it doesn't change its gravitational field instantly throughout the universe. It changes it right nearby, and those changes change the gravitational field right next to that, and then that changes it right next to that, and you get a ripple that moves out at the speed of light, and that's the gravitational wave.
You're listening to Blue Dot, and we are talking to Sean Carroll. He's a physicist at Caltech. One last thing I'd like to ask you, and by the way, when you started talking, I immediately had F equals G, M1, M2 over R squared pop into my head. So
good for you. The educational system did its job.
I'm a physics teacher, too. So I'm trying to do my job anyway. My students have been grappling with Newtonian gravitation problems for weeks here.
All right, good.
And some of them failing miserably, which is probably my fault. But what I'd like to ask you is, can you put this into perspective for the average person? Why should they care about this detection or the general theory of relativity? Why is it important to all of us?
Because we all live in the same universe. We all share this universe, and we all obey its laws of physics. And we human beings like to do more with our lives than merely survive and get to the next day, we have higher goals, higher aspirations, such as understanding the world around us. That's really one of the things that makes us human. And this ambition, this aspiration to understand the world, has been fantastically successful in the realm of physics. You know, we just understand so much about how the world works. And again, this particular example is an amazing example where, you know, Einstein in his brain came up with these equations, and essentially these stretched across a billion light years away to make a prediction about something that happened that was then observed in a billion-dollar observatory 100 years later, the work of 1,000 people working very hard, and it pushed a mirror back and forth a tiny, tiny amount, smaller than the size of an atom, and the prediction was exactly right. It is just astonishing that we can do that well, and I think that we human beings have the right to pat ourselves on the back a little bit for understanding our universe quite this accurately.
I could use a neck rub right now, so that works for me. One last thing I'd like to ask you is, what do you think is one of the major misconceptions that people have about people who are physicists?
Oh, I don't know.
Are there stereotypes?
Yeah, you know, but I would like to believe that people have conceptions of physicists at all.
Well,
I'm not sure if many people know that physicists even exist.
There's a popular television show on CBS that, you know.
There is, Big Bang Theory. I'm actually a big fan of the Big Bang Theory. I think a lot more people know the difference between a theoretical physicist and an experimental physicist now than did 10 years ago. And certainly the number of people applying to be physics majors has gone up. So, you know, I think that we need to get the word out. If there's one thing that I would like to spread, it's the idea that physics in particular, or science more generally, is an activity. It's a process. It's not a set of results. It's not a set of facts. It's not a list of truths that you're supposed to memorize. It's a way of thinking about the world. It's a way of going through our lives, looking at things, analyzing problems, solving them, asking questions, testing our ideas. And if we are able to get that across to our students of any age, that, you know, science is a way of doing things, it's not a set of test answers, then I think people will understand physics a lot better.
I sure appreciate you spending the time with us today.
Sure, it's been my pleasure.
That was Sean Carroll, cosmologist, author, science journalist, and professor at Caltech.
And now, Matt, we're going to talk to one of the scientists who was in a large part in charge of making sure that the results were real, sifting through the data to make sure that these results really held up scientifically before they published them. And it's kind of an unsung type job, you know, that has to be done after you make a detection like this. Months and months of analyzing the data has to happen.
Right, because the signal that was acquired on this data, it's sort of like trying to pick up a whisper in a crowded room or something like that.
It is. And the signal was pretty unambiguous, but they wanted to make sure that they got everything they could out of this before they published their results. And his name is Michela Vallisneri from NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory. Tell us about when you first found out about the detection of the gravitational waves. Was it back in September that you first heard about this?
It was September, and LIGO was still in what we call an engineering run. So kind of fixing the last few things before it settles down to collect data for a long time, which would be a science run. And yet, you know, everything was already at its best sensitivity. So we weren't really weren't really in the mode of seeing any event, and yet it came. So it was a great surprise for everybody.
Explain to our listeners what gravitational waves are and why they're so difficult to detect.
Einstein's theory of general relativity explains gravity as the curvature of space-time. Things fall not because they're pulled by forces, but just because they follow the straightest path in curved space-time. Now, when you have very heavy bodies that are moving very rapidly, what they can do is generate some ripples through space-time. These are gravitational waves. They're traveling perturbations of, again, space-times. And the reason they're very hard to see is that even if you have extremely heavy and extremely rapidly moving bodies, so moving with great violence and really churning space-time around them, well, space-time is extremely stiff, so it's very hard to change it even a little bit. Great amounts of energy amount to very tiny ripples. Therefore, these tiny ripples are very hard to see. You need extremely delicate and extremely sensitive instruments.
Tell us about your role in this. You helped to confirm the results, right?
Sure. LIGO is a huge collaboration of hundreds of researchers with very different specialties. You have the experimenters who really know how the lasers and the interferometer and the suspensions work. You have theorists who think about what source is out there and when and how we can expect to see them. I fall more on the side of the data analysts, so the people actually taking the output of the LIGO instrument and feeding it through computers with many different kinds of software and analysis and so on. And for this analysis in particular, I was playing the role of a reviewer, which is not quite doing an analysis the first time, but seeing what my colleagues did and trying to look for weaknesses and to make sure it was actually tight.
What kind of weaknesses and things were you looking for that might signal that this was a false positive? What were some of the things you're trying to eliminate as possibilities?
Actually, this wasn't so much about false positives. It was obvious very soon that the signal was a good one, just because nature was so generous in providing a strong signal at a quiet time in the instrument. But even then, you know, when you start doing physics with a signal, you start analyzing and drawing consequences. You know, there are many little things that can go wrong, and you want to do them twice and three times, and you want to check your calculations. You want to make sure there are no hidden assumptions. One thing, for instance, is that even with one signal, you can try to estimate how many signals, how many such systems there are in the universe. It's not a very precise business because you'd like to have more, and we will have, I'm sure, in the future, more detection to work with. But even with one, you can try to do that. Estimate how many emerging black holes there are in the universe around us. If you do that, there are many ingredients to this calculation. Things like figuring out how sensitive your instrument was, how far you could see. And all of those rely on some mathematical analysis and on some physics ingredients. And you want really different kinds of expertise and many different eyes looking at them. That's part of why you see it took... It took 4 months to get this result out to the public, because we wanted not only to be extremely sure of the detection, but also to present the best possible case.
Take care, and thanks for your time today.
Thank you.
That was Michaela Vallisneri, who was part of the team that elected and confirmed gravitational waves. I'm Matt Schiltz, along with Dave Shlom.
You're listening to Blue Dot, a look at our place in space. We're talking about gravitational waves. We'll be back in a minute. And we're back. Welcome to Blue Dot. We're talking about gravitational waves, and we're going to go now to Alan McRobert, senior editor for Sky and Telescope magazine. Alan, what I'd like you to do for us, could you put this into perspective for us, the gravitational waves detection announcement? Why is this such an important discovery?
Well, we've been covering the search for gravitational waves at Sky and Telescope since 1969, and it has finally happened. This is the great, you could even say, final confirmation of Albert Einstein's theory of general relativity, which is just about 100 years old right now. And it tests it in an extreme form that has never been possible to test it before, and it works like a charm. It works perfectly.
Tell us a little bit about when you first heard this news. Was it Friday, or had you had an inkling that this was going on before?
This was a very poorly kept secret. There were leaks. There was gossip. Details of, in fact, of the numbers of what they found were out before. But, yeah, this was very exciting. One thing it does is it not only tests this 100-year-old theory of basically how the universe is put together and works, that Einstein came up with, it also opens a new window of astronomy, a new whole new type of astronomy that looks like it's going to be very productive in coming years and decades and centuries.
What are some of the kinds of things that we will be able to do with this new kind of astronomy with instruments like this?
Well, how it works is anything, any object, any mass that accelerates gives off gravitational radiation, but extremely weakly. These are ripples in space-time, and it takes an awful lot to bend and move space and time themselves. So only the most extreme violent events in the universe, extremely dense, massive objects accelerating, changing their speed and direction very, very rapidly, create strong enough gravitational waves to be hope to detect. This thing that was discovered last fall in the LIGO instruments in Washington State and Louisiana was gravitational waves from two massive black holes spinning together and merging into one more than a billion light years away. And this was the most powerful and violent event that has ever been observed ever, anywhere in nature. During the last fraction of a second as they were coming together, this system emitted at least 50 times the power of all of the stars in the universe put together for that moment.
Put this into perspective for us. When the Higgs boson was detected, how big a story is this compared to that?
Oh, I'd say it's pretty comparable. It's something that everybody expected. I think a lot of physicists would have been much more pleased if it had turned out that this was the breakdown of general relativity, that it didn't work, just the way a lot of particle physicists would have been pleased if the Higgs boson wasn't there. That would really be a mystery. But this is a confirmation of what we've known all along, we thought we've known, we've theorized all along. It's a beautiful confirmation of theory, and it opens up new avenues ahead.
What do you think Albert Einstein would make of this 100 years later?
Well, as he famously said about the very first test of general relativity during an eclipse of the sun, whether light from stars passing by the sun would be predicted by just the amount that he said, he was asked, well, what would you have said if the stars hadn't shifted by the right amount? And he said, well, I would have felt very sorry for God, because the theory is correct.
On that note, Alan, thank you.
Okay.
Alan McRobert, senior editor for Sky and Telescope magazine. And now we're going to talk to a former editor-in-chief of Sky and Telescope magazine, a man who's been working on this particular story for the last few years and knows quite a bit about it. His name is Bob Noya. Bob, can you first of all tell us, what are like the big short-term implications of the detection?
I'd say first big implication is just the fact that this giant experiment funded by the National Science Foundation, known as LIGO, we know it works now, that it's made a detection. And given that it's going to increase its sensitivity in the years ahead, we can expect many more detections and very exciting science in the years ahead. The second thing that we've learned is that gravitational waves are for real. These are waves that are predicted by Einstein's general theory of relativity. So far, relativity has passed every test with flying colors. But this was a really big one, and now that they've been detected and in the form that was pretty much expected by scientists, it shows once again that Einstein was a pretty smart guy and had great insight into the future. As far as astronomy goes, a really exciting implication for this is it shows that black holes exist in binary systems. In other words, we can have systems with two black holes that orbit around each other around a common center of gravity, and that some of these black holes, if they're close enough to each other, they will eventually spiral in, crash into each other, and merge and emit gravitational waves in the process. So that's also very exciting. I would say, kind of for the general public, those are kind of the three big takeaways of this discovery.
What about down the road? What will gravitational wave observations in the future be able to allow us to probe?
Okay, that's a great question, Dave. And it's really the long-term implications that I think I personally, and I think most of the scientific community, find to be the most exciting. And the implication here is that gravitational waves give us an entirely new way to study the universe. And you can kind of look back over, let's say, the last 100 years of astronomy, that every time astronomers discover a new way to study the universe, always, and this is, 100% always the case, major discoveries result from this. And we find new types of objects and phenomena that were totally unexpected. I'll just give maybe one or two examples. During World War II and afterward, astronomers started to use radio waves, studying radio waves emitted by astronomical objects, and made really astounding discoveries. For example, they discovered pulsars, these rotating neutron stars that give off regular pulses. They discovered quasars, which are actually incredibly powerful cores of galaxies that give off radio waves and also other forms of light. And then later on in the 60s and 70s, they developed X-ray astronomy and started to discover black holes and other exotic objects. So now that we have the ability to study the universe in the way that emits gravitational waves, which is not a regular form of light, it's basically a perturbation in the fabric of space-time. And now that we can study those perturbations, I'd say it's almost a certainty we're going to learn some really interesting things about the universe, some of which are things we can anticipate, but the really exciting prospect is we're going to start learning things and discovering whole new types of objects that we didn't even know about.
Put this into perspective for us as a discovery. We were pretty sure gravitational waves existed, but to detect them, how important is this in the history of physics and astronomy?
I think it's hard to say, but I would predict that people looking back 50 years from now will look back on this detection and say this was really a landmark event in the history of physics and astronomy.
You hit it out of the park there. Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
Well, Matt, as the gravitational waves whisper onto the shores of the Earth, we're going to bid aloha to this story. Until next time, I'm Dave Sloan, reminding you that from deep space, we all live on a pale blue dot.
Aloha.